the EFL. It's the Football League podcast, hoping to avoid a replay, which in our world means remembering to hit record on the Zoom. Coming up, do you remember the first time? Terriers say no more. Foxes gobble up swans. We preview the battle to be crowned the second best team in Nottinghamshire and more. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Another week, another show for us then. You're very welcome. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined by my two Football League favourites. Hello, Sam Parkin.
Hello, Matt.
And Adrian Clark's back with us too. You okay, Clarkie?
Yeah. All good, mate. All good. Let's get straight to it, shall we?
Let's do that. But first, let me remind you of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the show. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, we're going to start with the opening gambit. So this is our feature to kick off the show, something random every week. This week, I want to know what the chap's first game was. This after Sam took his son to Loftus Road for the first time on Sunday and missed the QPR equaliser. Did he enjoy the experience, even despite that, Sam?
Yeah, I think he enjoyed it. We'd already been at the...
How can he enjoy it? That was one of the worst games I've ever seen.
I don't think he's a football purist as of yet, Clarkie. As strange as that may be for you to hear, I don't think he was totally taking in the spectacle on the pitch. It's quite difficult from behind the goal, actually, especially when your view is skewed by the netting and the goalkeeper. So I think he was probably transfixed on them. And we'd already been at Peppa Pig theatre show in the morning. So he was a little bit delirious and a little bit fatigued by the time the goal started going in. And yeah, I don't know, with hindsight, would I have done anything differently? Probably not, to be honest, because of those ingredients. And then I was a bit sad when the school end erupted, when the Huddersfield goal went in, and kind of explaining to him that Huddersfield had scored and that QPR could play until next Wednesday and not get a goal. So despite being wrong with that sentiment, I think I still made the right call. But it was quite nice because he was on my shoulders and we were walking the route that I used to walk with my dad. I parked on the same road by the KFC in Shepherd's Bush, and we heard the roar. And then I heard the song come on that comes on when QPR score. So I could still explain to him that QPR had equalised. And he said to me after nursery on Monday that hopefully QPR will win and it won't be a 1-1 next time. So he recalled the score. So I think I did half a good job.
Sounds brilliant, mate.
How was it compared to your first game, Sam? What can you even remember the first? It must have been a QPR game that you went to.
Yeah, and I would have been in the loft as well, as memory serves, but it's a bit hazy. It was against Manchester United, and I have looked it up, not today, but previously, and Gordon Strachan scored for United. It was a 1-1 draw. And I don't think I started going regularly until maybe a season or two after that. So it is a little bit hazy, but I remember the view being horrendous. I think it was still an artificial surface at QPR, but 1-1 against a United side very much in the doldrums during that period was enough to keep me going back and back.
How about you, Clarkie? What was your first time?
Yeah, I remember it clear as day. I was only six. Yeah, I've looked this up since, but I can remember it. 21st of February, 1981. So going back a bit, it was snowing. So that was something that was very, very memorable. I was in the lower tier of the Cobbold stand. For those that watched the Maidstone game, that's the stand that the Maidstone supporters were in. And Ipswich beat Wolves 3-1 to go top of the First Division. So the equivalent of top of the Premier League. Walk, Gates and Beattie scored the goals. And for Wolves, you'll know the scorer, Andy Gray scored for Wolves that day. So, yeah, fantastic memory. What a team that Ipswich side was. I mean, this is alienating our younger listeners, but I rattled through the side. Paul Cooper in goal, Mick Mills, Terry Butcher, Russell Osman, Kevin Beattie, midfield, Steve McCall, Arnold Murin, John Walk, up front, Kevin O'Callaghan, star of Escape to Victory, Paul Mariner, and Eric Gates. Great days.
Yeah, well, my first game was Forest beating Man United 4-0 at the world-famous City Ground in 1990. Should not have bothered going back after that. Who can tell me which championship manager started for Manchester United that night? We're going to be talking about his team soon.
Robbins.
Yeah, Mark Robbins. It was that year, wasn't it, that he got the goal in the FA Cup third round against Forest that reportedly saved Fergie's job. But yeah, Forest won 4-0. That was a bit of fun. We're going to talk about the games that happen midweek next. I say midweek, I mean Tuesday, because we're recording on Wednesday, but you'll take it at face value, I'm sure, listener. Leicester beat Swansea 3-1 then. They're 11 points clear at the top of the table. Interesting, Clarkey, that Kiernan Dewsbury-Hall got the first. This days after Leicester told Brighton that he's not for sale. We're recording before the deadline closes, but there's no point in selling him now, is there, surely?
I think he's worth a lot to Leicester City. He's their best player. He's the most destructive player in the team. I mean, when he makes those runs, for anyone that hasn't seen the goal, he sort of makes a run from deep, and it's Patson Daka, who's really lively in the game, plays him in on a 1v1, and he just never looked like missing, and no one can catch him. Because once he gets going, he's got an incredible turn of foot as Dewsbury-Hall. It'll be a great signing for a Premier League club like Brighton, but Leicester are heading back to the Premier League, and, you know, he's come through the academy, and, you know, he should be the talisman that plays for them in the Premier League, in my opinion. They shouldn't be cashing in. So, yeah, I would like to see him stay. And, yeah, this was typical Leicester performance, wasn't it? One-way traffic. Yeah, they pick them off. Swansea gift them a goal from overplaying at the back, which is something they do most weeks, Swansea City, no matter who the manager is. But yeah, I think in general it was a good performance. But the news line to come out of it is that Leicester fans are incredibly grumpy. There's a quote, isn't it? I don't know if you've seen this, from Enzo Maresca. "I arrive in this club to play with this idea. The moment there is some doubt about the idea, the day after, I will leave. It's so clear. No doubts." So he's fed up of the fans that don't appreciate what is incredible winning football. It's a strange time at Leicester. I personally don't get it, because what can they do if everyone parks the bus against them? They've got to be patient.
Yeah, you don't really want Dean Smith coming back based on what we saw last season. So enjoy it while you can. Now, what about Swansea, Sam? No wins in the league for Luke Williams still. 3 defeats on the spin. They're 17th in the table. Was it always going to take a little while for him to make his mark, given that his style is so different to Michael Duff's predecessor?
Yeah, I think so. There may be a case to... It sounds strange what I'm about to say, but just to probably solidify actually in the short term, and probably go away from what is a really clear philosophy of his. They're giving away some terrible goals. The high line was badly exposed again last night at Leicester and previously against Bournemouth, in which I did actually tune into that game. If you two can help me out with which channel it was on, because I stumbled across it. It was bizarre. It was a channel I'd never heard of before.
BBC Wales?
Don't think it was BBC Wales, bizarrely, but I think
I couldn't find it, because I knew it was on and I was like, well, where is it? I can't see it.
I had about 10 minutes of it because there was a friend of ours, Matt, wasn't there, commentating. So I think that was my thought process, that he might be on it. And I think the commentary was actually in Welsh, but I don't think it was the BBC.
I think it was BBC Wales.
I don't think it was, but I digress and I'm boring myself now. But yeah, they were woeful in that game, clearly, in the first half. So I think not pressure on the game against Argyle at the weekend. I think it's a winnable game for them, obviously, with Plymouth Argyle's away record. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he sets the team up. I think realistically, it's a massive summer for Swansea. I think there's still quite a lot of anger and discontent with the ownership of the club. I don't think Luke Williams will come in for any flack this season, unless it's incredibly disappointing. But yeah, it's not been a good start. And hopefully they can start to turn it around at the weekend.
Elsewhere, Coventry and Bristol City drew 2-2, topsy-turvy game this one. Coventry led, then fell behind, only for Ellis Sims to level late on. As Mark Robbins said, Clarkey, much needed goal for him, wasn't it? Only 4th of the season, and keeps Coventry's unbeaten run going, 12 now in all comps.
It does. I think they'd be disappointed that they didn't win, but on reflection, I don't think they deserve to win. I think this was the story of the game really is Bristol City taking it to Coventry. fantastic start to the game. Absolutely swarmed all over them inside the first 20 minutes. Coventry won't help because they lost Ben Sheaf and they had to put on Latabertier into his position in midfield, which sort of disrupts things. Naki Wells played very well, came in for Conway and scored a good goal. So I think, yeah, Bristol City will be delighted because they were really positive in the game and they took it to them. But yeah, Coventry sort of had to scrape a point, really. And yeah, Sakamoto did it. Sakamoto versus Pring, two really good players going head to head. That was an interesting battleground. But yeah, not a game Coventry will look back on with a great deal of fondness, I guess.
S4C then, Sam, that Bournemouth game. That's the Welsh Channel 4, effectively. Bristol City's... Well, Bristol's quite close to Wales, Sam. They are 6 points off the playoffs, which I guess is quite close, but are they able to bridge that gap or is it a little bit too far given the teams above them?
I don't think it's too far. If you're asking me for a prediction now, I'd probably say they fall a little bit short this season. I think they could do with a couple of maybe big signings, certainly a greater goal threat. I think that's probably always been an opinion of mine going back maybe a couple of seasons. So I think they'd like to add in that area. See, Scott Twine's going to be out for a couple of weeks now, so they're going to be missing his artistry. But yeah, with Clarkie, really, I thought it was an eye-catching performance. I thought it was an eye-catching performance the week before against West Ham. I was really impressed with the plan, actually. It's just kind of executing it, which maybe means they need slightly better players in some departments. But yeah, good tactical switch as well from the manager last night, getting Conway up there with Wells as they were trying to push for that victory. And obviously with them two in tandem and combining, Naki Wells gets himself a goal. So I think they probably leave with slightly more credit than Coventry on the night, but let's not diminish what is an unbelievable run that Coventry are currently on, 12 unbeaten, I think, in all comps, 10 in the league. And they've positioned themselves right back in the mix for another stab at promotion.
They sure have. Bristol City's next three, Leeds, Borough, Southampton in the league. So a tough run coming up for them. Elsewhere, frustration for League One leaders Portsmouth. They conceded a late equaliser at Oxford. Callum Lang thought he'd won it after scoring on his debut 10 minutes from time, but James Henry levelled for the hosts in stoppage time. Is it a blip or a wobble, Sam, for Pompey? Won three of their last nine in the league.
Well, over a longer period, yeah, over that length of time, it has been a wobble, absolutely. But I think you look at the last three away games, I think it's 7 points from nine. So they've actually recovered, I think, after that difficult spell. And I think just reinforcing the squad was the most important thing, which they've done now. I think Tom McIntyre's completed as well from Reading, desperate for defensive reinforcements, spoken so often about the missing Regan Paul. And I don't think Towler and Raggett have been brilliant on occasions. So yeah, to get a little bit of depth in that department, vital. Miles Pert-Harris, player that we know, Matt, from coming through at Chelsea, played last night, played the last few, a little bit off it last night, probably to be expected due to his lack of first team involvement, obviously, throughout this season, and now bringing in Callum Lang. So I think they've actually kind of filled those spots that were desperately needed. They'll be strengthened for it, and I think they'll make a good fist of it now, having made those signings. But I mean, the top of League One, you put Oxford in the equation, some of the teams we're going to talk about later in today's pod, it's got the makings of such an exciting race because there isn't that outstanding team, in my opinion, this year. There's five or six very, very good teams, but there's no one that you would put your house on getting promoted at this stage, which makes for an unbelievably exciting end to the season.
What do you make of the Lang signing, Clark? It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because a couple of seasons ago, he was banging them in for Wigan, but it's not really been the case over the last few terms. So important for him to hit the ground running, I guess, for Pompey.
Yeah, and it was a good goal. It was a lovely little ball over the top from Marlon Pack, and he controls it, holds off his man and tucks it away lovely. And yeah, it would have been the dream debut had his keeper, Norris, not sort of spilled that shot later on. That was a poor mistake from him. But yeah, no, Callum Lang, is bright, isn't he? He's bright, he's breezy, he'll give you everything, he'll make lots of runs. He won't be prolific, but he's the sort of player that can make things happen. So in tight games where Pompey maybe aren't fully at it, he might be a difference maker. He might be someone that can just make a run, that makes something happen, either opening space up for somebody else or getting on the end of something. So I think it's quite an astute pickup, actually. And the fact that he's scored already is a massive bonus.
Just one other note from this game. I think he's made our team of the season in previous years. James Henry, I didn't know he was still going. And he's made 6 substitute appearances, so that's why. But great to see him getting a goal, because I would say he is one of my favourite players, or has been one of my favourite players in League One over the last decade to watch. He is a lovely footballer. So that was a nice little surprise seeing him pop up.
34 years young. My second favourite footballer with 2 first names, James Henry. One game
first.
Who's the first? Who do you think?
I don't know.
It's Adrian Clarke.
I was going Stuart Pearce there. Pearce works? No.
Not for me, Clarke.
His works, isn't it? Yeah.
Harrogate 1-2-1 at Sutton in League Two. Their first ever win there. They're a point from the playoff spots now. Clarke, you had something to say about this.
Wow. We should have been talking. I want to apologise to any Harrogate fans that might be regular listeners. We've been blanking you, really.
Good shout, mate. I was thinking the exact same this morning. I mean, some run they're on, isn't it?
Yeah, they're up to 8th. This is a team that I think I tipped them to be bottom 2 this season. And they're up to 8th. What about the away record, Sam? They've won 8 of 14 away matches in League 2 this season. 26 points on the road. If they win their game in hand, which is an away game, they'll have the best away record in the entire division. Better than Stockport, better than Mansfield, better than any of the big boys. It's remarkable. And I sort of dug a little bit deeper. Obviously, you've got Jack Muldoon, who's sort of an eye catcher, who's in good form at the minute. They've conceded 16 set-piece goals, which is the worst record in the division. So if they can fix that, They could be really, really hard to break down, because in open play, only Stockport have let in fewer goals than Harrogate Town. So bravo to the defence. I noticed that 3 of their regular back 4 were missing from this game as well. So, very, very well coached team. We know that. And, what a story it would be if they snuck into the playoffs.
Yeah, well done, Harrogate. We'll give you some more love from now on. Maybe we could go on a field trip there as well, because it's supposed to be very nice, isn't it, Harrogate? Well,
it's one I haven't done in the 92, so it's definitely one I want to go to. Maybe we could have our a jolly up there. That'd be nice.
I've never been to Harrogate Football Club, but I did go to a wedding there. There's a reason for this anecdote, and I shared a room with Paul McGregor of Nottingham Forest. Wow, I say share a room. I went back there for a couple of drinks with him and his other half at the time, and I think my hotel was a couple of miles away, and I ended up just crashing out on his floor. So there you go. Most rock and roll footballer, rock and roll story. Not me, by the way. Greg,
love it. Betty's tea room, by the way, Harrogate. I've been there. It's quality. Yeah, nice.
Okay, worth bearing in mind. Well, Harrogate is not too far from Huddersfield, and that's who we're going to talk about next. Well, Huddersfield are on the hunt for a new manager again. This after the Terriers decided Darren Moore's football lacked bite and points. No surprise, really, this, Sam. He only won 3 of 23 games.
No, not really. I think if you just look back over the owner's comments the last few weeks, that probably gives the game away and tells the story, his kind of feelings, his sentiment over the last few weeks. So I think given the last 3 games were, if memory serves me right, Blackburn, Plymouth, QPR, and the points returns only been 3 points. I think he needed to win one of those games. He needed to get a better return out of those winnable fixtures, especially with what's around the corner. I think it's Sheffield Wednesday, of course, this weekend, and then it gets a lot tougher for Huddersfield. So it was difficult to envisage where the turnaround was going to come from. He's spoken a lot, the owner, about Darren Moore being back now in the market. He's certainly given him 3 players in the last few weeks, and the standard of performance hasn't really turned around, albeit I thought they were better than QPR. It wasn't difficult. I thought QPR were absolutely abysmal. Probably the first time I've seen them in a few weeks. I thought it was a dreadful game. But I thought actually in terms of the structure of the team, the game plan, a few individuals marginally kind of shining, I thought that Huddersfield probably warranted the narrow victory. So in the aftermath of that, maybe slightly harsh, but absolutely not enough wins, and they'd have considerably more points had Neil Warnock stayed on. And what an incredible U-turn it would be if Neil Warnock was to do his 5 weeks at the end of the season. I know we're talking about a little bit longer than that, but that would be some story, wouldn't it, if he came back in for a salvage job. But to be honest, I don't know what Clarkie thinks. I think that's what's needed now. And I know there's the want from the ownership and maybe the supporters to have a bit more of an exciting plan moving forward. You've got to stay in the division. So if it's not Neil Warnock, I think it calls for someone probably with that experience.
Yeah, if I was Neil Warnock, I'd tell him where to shove it, wouldn't you? I mean,
well, I watched a YouTube video of him on the golf course with his son the other day, which was very agreeable, actually. I enjoyed it thoroughly, but I'd stay well clear. I'd do my 5 weeks if I was him somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. He's done his bit there. He's helped them. And what thanks did he get? He got the bullet. So no, I wouldn't even contemplate picking up the phone if I was Neil Warnock. I think that the owner really got it wrong because, I mean, it's easy to say that now, but I think me and Sam were sceptical about Darren Moore's appointment, not least because they'd made such a fuss about the desire for progressive attacking football and just never really saw that as being Darren Moore's thing. I just think there are a lot of other coaches out there that they could have turned to that would have played more attacking football. I think he just looked at the players at his disposal and thought, not many goals in this team. We're going to have to keep things tight. And that's what he did. They were harder to beat maybe than before, but they just didn't offer enough of a threat in enough games today. And yeah, I think it was a fair enough decision from the owner, who's now got a choice to make. Some good names out there that might fancy it. Heckingbottom, I was thinking, might fancy it.
You mentioned him. He's the favourite for Heckingbottom. I'm surprised I suppose he did. He did help Sheffield United to promotion last season. But I mean, this is one of those where we're going to talk about it and everybody's going to know by the time I publish the podcast because they'll make the announcement. But your three tops, according to Odds Checker, Clarkie, you've got Paul Heckingbottom, who's odds on, then Michael Duff, then John Messinio. I mean, Messinio's not leaving Portsmouth for Huddersfield at the moment, is he? John Eustace and Alex Neil, also amongst the runners and riders.
I'd go for Heckingbottom because he did a really good job at Sheffield United, and I think he is a good manager. I do. You know, I wasn't convinced about them choosing him at the time, but he proved us wrong. You know, I thought they were excellent en route to promotion. I think the reason they've been so bad in the Premier League isn't necessarily down to Heckingbottom. I think it's due to the lack of direction from above.
I'd agree with that, actually. There's no way I could argue with that. What about Gary Rowett as a kind of in-between, just another name?
Yeah, I was thinking him and John Eustace haven't really been linked with much, have they?
I think it would probably be quite a dangerous one for John Eustace to take, considering their predicament. He'll probably get one with a bit more of a blank canvas, you know, where he can maybe bring in his own players and actually put his real stamp on it, like he probably wanted to do at Birmingham. No idea why, but when I was running this morning, Nigel Pearson just kept on coming into my mind. And again,
what, like shouting at you, saying, run faster, don't
just
stop.
Just calling me an ostrich, just saying, you look like an ostrich. Like, what is that gait? No, just like, I don't know, like, I've spoken about Tony Mowbray being that nice in between. Isn't Nigel Pearson a nice in between? Yeah. Like, experience, so many games, and quite likes entertaining football, quite likes players to express themselves. Whether he'd want to go in with the threat of relegation hanging over him, only he would know. But
he'd want to go in with a coach, I think. Because I was speaking to Jason Newell earlier in the week, who worked with him at Bristol City. He loves him, by the way. He said he was so nice, such a good guy. I've heard that from a few people actually about Pearson. The sort of public persona, I think, is not really him.
So they loved him in Bristol, didn't they? Absolutely loved him.
Absolutely loved him, and Jason loved him. But Nigel basically said to him, and I think it's Curtis Fleming at the time, said, look, I've done loads of coaching. like, I'm here, I'll chip in, but you go and do the sessions and we'll work on it together, but you can take them and I'll sort of observe and chip in. So I think he would need to go in with a coach. But I think that's a good shout. You can.
Well, yeah, if Nigel Pearson can tame a pack of wolves, then he can certainly get some terriers whipped into shape, you would have thought. Anyway, congratulations to the one name who we didn't mention there, who got appointed at some point on Wednesday after I put the podcast live. Next today, we're going to preview some of the weekend's big games. Let's start our previews with Preston versus Ipswich at Deepdale. Ipswich might be glad to focus on the League North end. Happy just to be back at home. Preston, Sam, only the second of their last six games that they have played at Deepdale. They've only won one of the last six there. All about Will Keane at the moment for them, is it? Three goals in his last four games?
I didn't know that, but it wasn't about him at the weekend. That's for sure, at Millwall. Although he did pass up probably their best opportunity in the second half to win it when it was at 1-1. Bizarre game, honestly. For 20 minutes at the end of the first half, Preston looked like Real Madrid. I don't know what happened. I mean, it was that usual kind of Millwall pattern of a game. Came out of the blocks ridiculously fast. Millwall should have been 2-0 up, could have been 3-0 up. And then just after about 25 minutes, just completely lost their way, and Preston were just popping the ball about. Whiteman, Ledson, Frocker, some really good football. Loads of threat in the wide positions through Miller and Potts, who got the goal. I think it was probably quite a compressed kind of midfield where the Keane comes to feet quite a lot, Frocker comes to feet quite a lot, Whiteman, Ledson, really good ball-playing midfielders, and Mill with Honeyman and Mitchell in the middle just had a torrid, basically just chasing shadows. And like I said, they had a real threat in the wide positions as well. And I thought, hello, kind of like rubbing my hands together and thinking, this is what Preston North End are capable of. This is why the fans have been frustrated. And then in the second half, just regressed and just seemed to be happy to sit in and try and get away from South London with the point. So they got a decent round of applause. I went through quite a lot of the comments on the Twitter and kind of to gauge the opinion of the Preston North End fans, and they're just bitterly disappointed and frustrated that they are capable of so much more than they're showing. So once more, I think they go back home this weekend with big pressure on them to get some points and perform. And when I think the writing's kind of been on the wall for Ryan Lowe and he's really needed a win, they found it against Leeds a few weeks ago and then against Bristol City. But the stats don't lie. 5 wins in 22, I believe it is, after that wonderful start to the season where they won 6 of their first 8 games. So Peter Risdale has backed Ryan Lowe. I think he said he's going to be there till the summer, but I think the noise from the supporters is getting louder and louder. And it was just such a head scratcher at the weekend because I just do believe they are capable of playing more attacking football, but goals are really hard to come by. Multiple goals in games are so infrequent. So I think it's a big game for both. And clearly it's a banana skin for Ipswich, but one that they can probably be confident that they can come away from the Northwest with some points.
Preston might be doing it without Alan Brown. Twitter spinning with rumours that he might be going to Salernitana in Serie A, who are managed by Pipo Inzaghi. That's not what most people had on their bingo cards, I don't think. So Ipswich, Clarkey, looking to bounce back from that Maidstone embarrassment. I think you can say, oh, well, you know, the league's our priority this season. It's not a big thing to be out the FA Cup, but it's harder to brush it off when it's on TV in front of millions of people, presumably.
Yeah, it's a bit of red faces around Suffolk, I'm sure. They have 38 shots. I mean, it wasn't a car crash of a performance, was it? It was, you know, they did lots of good stuff. Sammy Ento was good again. But yeah, the fragility, you know, I've talked before about sort of that defensive issue, maybe a lack of pace, you know, that they were exposed by one ball over the top, weren't they? And then the other one was a turnover they couldn't recover quickly enough from. So, you know, that will give Preston encouragement. I think Preston down the sides with Miller and Potts will fancy themselves against the Ipswich fullbacks. But equally, I think that Wes Burns, who shaved his hair off, by the way, I don't know if you've seen this. The man bun's gone. That space in between the left side centre back and the wing back, and on the other side, I think that's where Leeds really got at Preston the other day when I was there. And I think that obviously with Ipswich's wide players, probably be Burns and Sarmiento, but it could be Broadhead, it could be Hutchison, I guess, as well. So I think out wide is where this game would be won or lost. I think both teams will score, but I sense Ipswich might just edge this one.
You're chucking Ali Alhamadi in from the start. They bought him from AFC Wimbledon, 17 goals in 29 for the Dons this season. Somebody who we've had our eye on.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I was just watching a video this morning of his sort of compilation of goals, and just as a reminder, really, of what he's about. And, you know, his finishing's really improved. He's quick, isn't he? He'll make those runs in behind. He's really good at sort of making a run in behind, holding it up, and then chopping in onto his left or right foot to smash it into the net. He's very, very good at that. Yeah, he's a willing runner, and I think Ipswich need a willing runner up front in the absence of George Hurst. He's strong, he can hold it up, and look, he's going to be seriously hungry, isn't he, to impress, you know, the Iraqis. Only 21 still, and this is a big old step up. They've paid, they've shown a lot of faith in him, and I think he's going to be eager to make an impression. It is a step up, but from what I've seen, he could walk straight into the team and make a difference. I don't know. I'm interested to see what Sam thinks about Alhamadi, actually, because he's probably seen him a little bit more than I have.
Yeah, I've probably seen him four or five times live over the last year or so. I think he's very good. And I think consistently I say that League Two and League One, there's not much difference. There's not much of a jump. So therefore, the natural step for him probably was the Championship, because I think he would have ripped it up in League One as well. So it's a bit of a gamble throwing him straight in. I think there's the necessity there because of Hurst's injury. But I do see, despite Hurst being a good few inches taller, I see quite a lot of similarities between the profiles of the players. And I think that one of the most eye-catching facets of Ipswich's game early part of the season was Hurst's ability to be mobile up there, to run in behind, to get one-on-one and finish. And I think Alhamadi will bring all those ingredients. I don't think they're reliant on having someone that can head the ball necessarily, and I don't think that's his strongest suit. I don't think Hurst is particularly good in the air for his size either, but I don't think Ipswich sling too many balls in there, and I don't think they go back to front often enough for that to be too much of a concern. Interestingly, though, to contradict myself there, I think the talk is they're still going to go for Gallagher as well at Blackburn. So they're going to get that option into the squad as well, or certainly going to do business with another front man. So that will take the pressure off Alhamadi to a degree. But no, I think he's an excellent young player. I know that AFC Wimbledon obviously is so devastated to lose him, but I think that the noise coming out of the Ipswich camp after they met in the cup a few weeks ago was pretty evident that they were keen on their front man. So I don't think there's too much surprise that this deal's gone through. I'm sure everyone in the Championship would have wanted to get him, and I'll be really excited to see how he goes. But yeah, I think he's a top talent, and he's got so many good things about his game. It would be a real surprise to me if he does struggle and fail to make the grade.
All right, well, let's see if he gets some minutes this weekend. Elsewhere in the Championship, the Teesweir Derby doesn't roll off the tongue, that, does it? But it does provide us with an interesting game. Sunderland, hashtag Bielin, travel to the Riverside to face Middlesbrough. Adrian, this will be Borough's first game since Sam and I watched them get absolutely dismantled by Chelsea. That was a chasing experience, not just for Borough, but for Michael Carrick, I thought too. I've got this theory that young managers ought to have an old assistant beside them. He's got Jonathan Woodgate, similarly inexperienced. Do you put any credence in that?
I don't know what you're saying. Yeah, it might not do any harm. Yeah, just someone to confide in, someone that's been there and done it, I guess. I'll tell you what, this will be a test for it. This will be a test for the players, because they want to play out from the back, and they obviously had a stinker against Chelsea in terms of being caught on the ball. You know, are they going to be brave enough to carry on doing it? Is a midfielder going to show for the ball in the way that Carrick wants them to in this game? Because in the Championship, they've been all right at that, you know. So a little test of character for them. They'll have Luke Ayling back in the team, I guess, who couldn't play in that game against Chelsea. Luke Thomas might get a game as well, on loan from Leicester, of course, at left back. The issue for Borough is the home form is rank bad. Since the start of December in the Championship at home, they've lost to Ipswich, they've lost to Hull, they beat West Brom, they lost to Coventry, drew with Rotherham. I mean, that's pretty poor. They haven't scored more than one goal in any of those games. They need to get a little bit of excitement back into the Riverside performances. So, but maybe this is the game to do it, you know, with Sunderland coming to town. I mean, imagining Greenwood and Azaz and maybe Coburn might come back into the team. So, yeah, they just need a lift-off performance, Middlesbrough, if they're going to emulate what they did last year. Because I was reading that they're only 2 points behind where they were at this stage last year. And, of course, they comfortably made the playoffs. So they're capable of getting promoted from here. But to me, they don't look like a promotion team this year.
Just on what Clarkey was saying about Middlesbrough playing out from the back, especially at Stamford Bridge, I thought a big part of that problem as well was they didn't have anyone with stature at the top end of the pitch or anyone that could run in behind. So therefore, subversely, I thought that Middlesbrough had to kind of tiptoe forward and play one or two extra passes, which obviously had such a negative effect. If you think about that first game, they could just play over the top to Isaiah Jones. Latterly, Coburn came on, who's a little bit out of favour right now. And Latte Lath got injured in that first minute against Chelsea at the Riverside. So I think sometimes that does kind of make the manager have to go a slightly different way. So yeah. I think that will be really interesting this weekend ahead of this game, which isn't a derby by all accounts, Matt, from which I've read. I think it is potentially a derby from the Middlesbrough side, but certainly not from the Sunderland fans.
It's got a Wikipedia page. It's a derby.
Has it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Ask me about Sunderland.
I was just going to say, what about Sunderland, Sam? Strolled past Stoke last weekend, fringe of the playoffs. Michael Beale saying, what are you worried about? He could give a debut to the son of John Olaf Yelder, Leo, who signed from Leeds.
Right. I was going to say I found it a bit sour, like a bit distasteful to stuff over the last week. I mean, I haven't seen it, but I understand some of the stuff on social media, as it often is, was a little bit below the belt. Just unusual to see a manager who's only had, what, a handful of games getting so much grief. And he came out swinging a little bit, didn't he, before the game against Stoke about his accent and maybe people aren't enjoying that and that. He hasn't worked in London for a long period and people need to get over that, so on and so forth. So I didn't think that went down particularly well. So obviously the result was huge against Stoke. And I think for a number of reasons, he actually left with a lot of credit. And probably there'd be some people that have been pretty unkind about him, probably reflecting the last few days, just to give him a little bit more time to get things right. But I thought tactically, a couple of little shifts. I thought two out-and-out wide players, Pritchard, who's obviously looks to be on the way out, bit of a kind of high profile spat potentially with someone at the club leading to him.
Birmingham, isn't it? Yeah, he's going
to get off to reunite with old Mowbray. But I thought tactically having two out and out wide players in the team really helped. I think Jack Clark delivered a lot of deliveries from wide for Mason Burstow. And the change to have Ekwa and Bellingham pushed on just with Dan Neil holding the midfield seemed to be a bit of a masterstroke, getting Ekwa back around the 18-yard box where we've seen this season he can be a provider and also get goals. So I thought it was a really big day for Sunderland. And in this fixture, I can tell you that Sunderland have only won three times at Middlesbrough in 35 games, dating back to 1954. So they'll have to be at it, because the history favours the home side very much so.
Well, that is interesting, given we've spoken about Borough's woes at the Riverside. We'll see who comes out on top there. In League One, it's all about the letter B as Bolton and Barnsley battle to see who's best. Bolton 3 points behind Pompey, but three games in hand. They were knocked out of the Football League Trophy at the quarterfinal stage on Tuesday, beaten by Blackpool on penalties. That means there'll be a new name on the trophy, Peterborough, Bradford, and either Brighton's under-21s or Wickham, the other semi-finalists. They're very good at home, aren't they, Clarkey? It's usually tough sheep for whoever visits.
It is. Yeah, they're a good team. They'll be disappointed, won't they, to lose that one on penalties. And maybe more disappointed that two of their key defenders got injured in that game. Ricardo Santos, obviously we know about his importance, and Owen Toll, you know, big player for them this season, particularly when they play out from the back. They both are looking likely to miss the game, which could be a problem. So, yeah, attack might be the best form of defence for Bolton in the match. They're looking to strengthen their attack. I don't know if you saw this. They've put in a bid of $600,000 for Aaron Collins at Bristol Rovers. I believe the backup is Niall Ennis, maybe a loan move from Blackburn because he's not really getting a sniff at Ewood Park, is he? So they are looking to beef up at the top end of the pitch. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, they've won six of their last seven in League One. They're a top team. And look, they're 3 points behind Pompey with three games in hand. So they're in the box seat to win the title, I think, Bolton Wanderers this season. But this will be a tough game. You know, Barnsley are decent, we know that. And they've both got the same system. 3-4-1-2 is the way both gaffers go. So there is that little bit of danger that they might cancel one another out. So we'll watch this space on that.
Yeah, they have added a couple of defenders actually this week. Bolton, they've signed Nathaniel Ogbetta on loan from Swansea and Calvin Ramsey on loan from Liverpool. They've had some success, haven't they, with loans in recent years. I think of the likes of Conor Bradley and James Trafford in particular. Interesting game this for Barnsley, Sam, isn't it? Coming off the back of that surprise home defeat against Exeter. They were unbeaten in the league since November before that.
Yeah, I think they're due a bit of an apology, Clarkey. What do you reckon? Similarly to their near neighbours, Harrogate. I think this is under the radar stuff, Barnsley, and credit to Neil Collins, who was obviously a rookie when he got the gig, following on from Michael Duff, who did unbelievable work last year in getting them to that playoff final. And I had a little look. There's only four starters actually from that playoff final that played in the most recent Exeter game. So it's a lot of new players in that 11. And also, apology to Devante Carwell, I don't think gets too many mentions on this podcast, who's the top scorer in the division, which I couldn't believe when I saw it. So, yeah, as Clarkey says, still the two up front. I think Max Waters with him last time out. And in different performances and results maybe recently at Oakwell, but it's away from home where they're really good. Four more points on the road than they've taken in front of their supporters, and only Pompey and Derby won more away games. So, yeah, really good travellers. And the last 12 games, averaging over 2 points per game, one of five teams that are currently doing that. But absolutely got another opportunity to emulate what they did last year. And they were so unfortunate with that. Obviously, Phillips' red card, and despite going down to 10, had some good chances against Sheffield Wednesday. If you remember back, this was the fixture, wasn't it? Bolton Barnsley in the semi-final, when they cancelled each other out to a degree. I think it was 2-1 on aggregate, not much between the two sides. And possibly the return of Luke O'Connor, who I think scored in that playoff
meeting.
Yeah,
good player, Luke.
Back involved, and could be important in this one when we've got two similarly looking sides in terms of their setup. So, no, I think they deserve, you know, big credit, Barnsley, and absolutely in the conversation once more for promotion.
Yeah, start the weekend in fifth, 5 points behind Bolton. And meanwhile, in League Two, there might be trouble at Field Mill, that is, and Nottinghamshire Derby's going down. It's Mansfield against Notts County. It is a sellout. Stags, Adrian, you know, perennial disappointment for me and Sam in wanting them to go up. They haven't won any of their last four. They haven't won at home since Boxing Day. They're a point clear of the playoffs in third, six behind leaders Stockport. But yeah, they need to see a bit of an uptick in results, if not performances.
Yeah, definitely. They'll be buoyed by the fact that they smashed Notts County in the reverse. So they'll take confidence from that. I think it was 4-1 at Meadow Lane. So Notts County might feel a slight bit of trepidation, and I sense from Nigel Clough that he's a little bit, he feels hard done by. I know he's moaning about the referee decisions in the game against Wimbledon. They got done by a last minute winner as well, did they? In that game, had two players sent off, picked up injuries as well, so they're feeling a little bit blue. But this is, in a way, the perfect match, isn't it? A little bit of a derby to get the juices flowing. Little bit of pressure, I guess, on someone like Davis Keelor-Dunn, who's been superb this season, carried the goal threat, but in this run of four games without a win, he hasn't scored. So he's not quite been at it. Yeah. So if that's going to continue, can a Will Swan step in and do the business, or Lucas Akins, can they carry that goal threat in the game? But yeah, this would be a really nice match. Really nice match. Two very attack-minded teams. And I think one of the surprise lines that I've sort of read as I was thinking about this match was that it says the Stags could be without seven defenders on Saturday. Well, judging from what myself and Sam have been talking about Mansfield for the last couple of years, we kind of didn't know they had seven defenders in the first place, because they play with so many attacking players in that starting 11. But it is true, they're without seven defenders. One of them could be Aidan Flint, who's been massive for them. Obviously, he is massive, but he's been really influential as well. So, yeah, attack might be the best form of defence for Mansfield in this game.
What about Notts, Sam? Drew their first game at home under Stuart Maynard against Barrow last week. In the final playoff place, are they more or less likely to go up than Mansfield?
Oh, less likely, I would say. I think, yeah, the supporters wouldn't be too deterred if it was another season in League Two. I think it probably lacks a little bit of balance, maybe the squad and the 11. Interested to read about kind of the necessity to maybe get a little bit more defensively minded players into that lineup somewhere, probably in the midfield. I think it was Robertson and Bostock in there the other day, and they actually did okay in that 1-1 draw with Barrow. No surprise really to see Stuart Maynard going with the 11 essentially that Luke Williams finished his tenure with. That's generally how it would go. It's unusual to see a new manager come in and make wholesale changes. I was a little bit interested to see they only had the one shot on the target, I think 9 shots in total. But that said, we know that Barrow are one of the best coached and defensively minded teams in the division and are capable of shutting outside, so they wouldn't be too despondent about that. I think this game smells of goals. I could see a thriller playing out here and maybe them sharing 5 goals or something like that. I think looking at some numbers that Notts County need to improve in these big games, I think it's just 3 points out of 24 via the top 8. And conversely, Mansfield have taken 17 points against the teams around them in the top 8 in the division. So if Notts County want to make that jump, keep taking care of business against the lesser lights in the division, but obviously improving in these big games, and they'll be in those playoffs. They've got enough goal threat and enough good attacking players to make it. But I suppose a lot of it is going to be about how the new manager and staff acclimatised to the level.
Surprised it's a 3 o'clock kickoff, this, because it's a bit spicy between the supporters, obviously. But we've got the early kickoff in League Two, and we know about the fabled rivalry between Newport and Swindon. So I guess that one had to go in the 12:45 slot. Right, there's a couple of ways that you can help us with this podcast. You can give us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Or you can follow us on social media at EFL What The on X, formerly known as Twitter, and at What The EFL on Instagram and TikTok. Before we go, I'll give you a reminder as well of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. And let's have a quick quiz before we finish, shall we, chaps? Standard issue here. 3 questions. Fastest finger first. All based on some of the games we've just been talking about. We'll start with this one on the Nottinghamshire Derby. Which Premier League winner and former Notts County caretaker manager scored for the Magpies against Mansfield in a 2-1 Stags win in the Football League Trophy in 2017?
There's a lot of information there. Can we have it again?
Which Premier League winner and former Notts County caretaker manager, hand up from Adrian Clark?
Sol Campbell?
Nope.
Former Notts County caretaker manager.
And former Notts caretaker manager, and he scored for Notts against Mansfield in the Football League Trophy in 2017.
I mean, that's
Sol Campbell, by the
question.
Way, played about 10 minutes for Notts County. So
yeah. Can you give us the team he won the Prem with?
Oh, come on. Come on, Sam. You've missed the boat here. You've missed the boat. It's nil-nil.
Hang on. Sam hasn't even had a guess yet. All right, I will give you that team. He won the Premier League with Man United, but that's not who he's most famous for playing for.
Oh my God. Notts County. There's something in the back of my mind, but I'm just seeing Jack Grealish in a Notts County kit. So negative.
I'm thinking Paul Ince now, but yeah, I don't know if that's true.
He was a striker, and he has the same name as another famous striker turned co-commentator for Sky.
We don't deserve a point here.
No, Don, someone.
No, it was Alan Smith was the answer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do
remember being there, yeah.
Not good. Two questions left.
Tough start.
Yeah, it was a tough start. Yeah.
You've got to know your audience. Come on.
All right, well, let's see if you do any better with this one. Julio Arca played for both Middlesbrough and Sunderland. Which non-league club did he manage until last month? Sam, straight in with the answer.
Oh, I don't think it's right, but I'm going to go Blyth Spartans.
It's not right, no. Clarkie?
Oh, I know this as well.
It's a northern team. It's a northeast team.
I feel like we might be on for a nil-nil here for the first time ever.
Oh, really? Is it not a northeast team?
No. It is, but...
I'm going to go for Spennymoor.
Okay, it's a great name and I enjoyed hearing it, but it's not right. Sam, you've already had your guess, so this won't count.
Yeah, I'll know it as soon as you say it, but I can't get it. Go on.
South Shields.
I know it was South or North Shields. Yeah. I knew it would be one of them after I give my answer.
Well done, listener. You got that. Right, somebody's got to get this. Otherwise, it's a disgraceful 0-0. Sam played in Ipswich's 4-0 defeat against Preston in 2005.
Oh, that's a bad day.
Which England one-cap wonder scored a brace for Preston that day?
Yeah.
I want to let Clarkie go first because he didn't play in the game. Do you have a guess?
I mean, it's Dave Nugent, right?
Yeah. You knew that, didn't you, Sam?
I knew that. And I believe he scored about 50 goals against Ipswich in his career as well. Because I remember going into the game thinking this geezer destroyed Ipswich about 10 times and he destroyed us. And I was woeful.
Do we have a one-aller there? Should we have a dishonourable one-all draw?
Okay. I don't think anybody emerges from it with any credit. So even if I did award a win there, it would be scant consolation for what unfolded there. Listener, let us know if you got 3 from 3 or even 2 from 3 there at EFL What The on Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it. That'll do for today. I'll make an easier quiz for next week. Sorry, I phased you with Alan Smith, didn't I? That should have been the third question rather than the first one, but I wanted to link it into the most recent game that we talked about. I'm a sucker for a good format, if not a good quiz.
No, you're right to expect better standards from me and Sam. Don't beat yourself up there. This one's on us.
Okay, all right. Well, look, more homework to be done ahead of next week then. Enjoy the football if you're off to a game this weekend. I hope you get what you want in the transfer market as well. We'll be back with another show same time next week. Until then, thanks to Adrian and Sam, mainly to you for listening. Tell a mate we're here. We'd appreciate it. Bye for now.